see trees. Good morning. It's Wonderful World, the local San Marcos show about river issues and water issues. And we're here at KZSM.org, or you can listen now on FM 104.1. And we have a wonderful guest today. My name is Diane Wasnick. I'm your host. And we have Dr. Robert Mace, who is the head of the Meadows Center for Water and the Environment at the university. And Robert is going to talk to us about a book that he has recently completed, a publication. And so, welcome, Robert.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we are going to tell you a little bit about him. I told you he was at the Meadows Center. He replaced Andy Sansom there. And, of course, we think that Robert is the only possible person who could have replaced Andy, who was beloved.
You're too kind.
But Robert also worked at TWDB and had worked his way up in the ranks at that agency, and is a hydrologist, so he had much technical knowledge, which has been a terrific additional component to the work that he does at the Meadows Center. So tell us about your background and what you do at the Meadows Center.
Sure. So I have degrees in geophysics, hydrogeology, and hydrology. I'm from New Mexico Tech, as well as a little university up the road called University of Texas. Worked at the State Geologic Survey, also known as the Bureau of Economic Geology, and then the Texas Water Development Board for almost 18 years. I have a technical background, but when I was at the board, I interacted a lot with the legislature, so developed an interest in policy, water policy, and kind of did unofficial anthropogenic studies of watching policy creation and development over at the Capitol, and learned quite a few things there. So I've been here at Texas State University in the Meadows Center for over 7 years now, believe it or not.
Oh, I can't believe it.
And really enjoying it. The work that I'm doing, including the study we're going to talk about today, as well as working with the students.
But y'all work on international water issues at the Meadows Center too, don't you?
Yeah, we do. We've done work with Mexico, and then I've published a book on groundwater sustainability that looks at that issue on an international basis.
So all of your work at Meadows Center has to do with water.
Yes, it does.
And aquifers and so on. So that leads us to this book or publication that has just come out. Tell us all about that.
Sure. So it's a report, and you can download it for free at the Meadows Center webpage.
Great.
It's about 30 pages long. I can't say that it's a page turner. there's a bit of a technical analysis in there, but you know, I think folks could get something out of the executive summary and the conclusion section.
Oh, I'm sure. And it's an update to a book that is a page turner, or at least it's very sought after and valuable if you try to buy a copy of it, because it's out of print, and that's Gunnar Brun's book. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Gunnar Brun was a geologist. He did the first part of his career with the Soil Conservation Survey, and then when he retired, he joined the Water Development Board and did research on springs. He retired from the Water Development Board and then published this book, and the springheads out there are well familiar, Gunnar Brun's Springs of Texas, Volume 1.
What year?
81 it was published.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that recently. I mean, that's still 45 years ago.
Yeah, 81 is a long time ago.
Well, it seems like yesterday to me. But anyway, I'm glad to know that, because I've been thinking it had been done long ago. It's spoken of with such reverence, you know.
Yeah, it's a big green book. It's like 3.5 inches thick. Thick, you know, you can use it as a defense
mechanism. Oh, I think it weighs
mechanism.
About 30 pounds.
Yes, yes. The work that we did on the report that we wrote is not focused on the book, although the book became an important part of it. It's focused on a report he did for the Water Development Board. It's kind of a predecessor to the book called Major and Historical Springs of Texas. And what's different from that report versus his book is that the report has statewide coverage, has about 300 springs in it versus the more than 2,500 in the book. The book, there's only one volume, and sadly he wasn't able to finish volume two, so it has a partial coverage of Texas. And if you can get a hold of that book, it's very rich reading, fascinating reading. And it is the spring Bible for Texas.
That's a lot of springs compared to the report that was done as the predecessor.
Right. You can tell from the title of the report, he was focused on major and historical springs. So he tried to include all springs greater than 1 cubic foot per second.
Oh, tiny springs.
And then he had some smaller springs than that he considered historical. And of course, what you consider historical and what I consider historical can vary. But he had ultimately about 300 springs in that report.
Well, you know, that leads me to a question. Helen Bessie, was she assisting him on volume two? Is that her connection?
So Helen Bessie, she helped republish volume one with Texas A&M University Press.
Oh.
So if you're a book collector, you want to make sure you know which book you're getting. Because
yes.
I'll notice the prices online are the same, whether it's the 81 book or the repressing
that
A&M. Gunnar Bruhn self-published volume one. Uh-huh. It's a lighter green color. The newer one's a darker green.
Just out of curiosity, what kind of prices have you seen in the last year or so?
$700 to $1,000.
Wow.
Book.
Okay, well, I'll keep my eye out for the original volume.
So we focused on the Texas Water Development Board report, which is also available online for free at the Texas Water Development Board webpage.
The original report.
Correct.
Okay.
And the spark for the study came from an invitation to help co-author a short entry into an encyclopedia of spring biomes for the world. And Ben Hutchins was asked, also at Texas State University, to write up an entry. And since I knew a lot about kind of spring flows, he invited me to be part of that along with Peter Sprouse. And I knew from previous readings of the report that Bruhn reported how many springs had gone dry. So I once again went back to that report, found that number, did the calculations on the percentage, and wrote up a few sentences to send to Ben. In the process of doing that, that was when I reflected on the fact that that report was published in 1975.
Oh my.
And most of the field work that he did for that report was completed in 1971. And at the time,
my.
It was 2021, and I was like, that was 50 years ago.
Yes.
So this number that I and other people use for, you know, how many springs in Texas have gone dry is half a century old.
Oh my.
And so that got me thinking, somebody needs to go out there and revisit those springs.
Somebody.
Now, by happen chance, I had finished a study at Comanche Springs, and I dove into the history of the general area. There's a bunch of springs associated with that area. And so I learned some tricks and tools to go in and quote unquote revisit springs without, you know, having to risk getting shot by knocking on doors seeking access. So using Google Earth.
Yes.
And then also the Texas Water Development Board Groundwater Database also has some really nice imagery that's actually more detailed than Google Earth. So using satellite imagery, I could find the springs and quote unquote revisit them.
See if there's a green spot.
Exactly. See if there's, in fact, the imagery at the Water Development Board database is so good that you can see water.
Oh my goodness.
Whether there was water or not. Wasn't able to, you know, quote unquote, revisit all the springs, particularly the ones in East Texas where you get a lot of greenery.
Yes.
And so it's really hard to see. And so I did have to do a field trip and tour East Texas. And there was even a dog, Maggie, that helped me find one of the springs.
Did she defend you from other entities guarding the spring?
But she had, I'd suspected the spring was in this forest behind this house, and I went and knocked on the door, and the resident answered the door, and I was like, hey, I'm looking for a spring. I think it's in the woods behind your house. And she's like, I've only been here a week, so I have absolutely no idea. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. She goes, but you know what? My dog comes back smelling like sulfur. And this was a sulfur spring that I was looking for.
Oh, how perfect.
And I was like, I think your dog found the spring. So I'm like, where's the dog come out of the woods? And is it okay if I go back there and look around? Sure enough, the spring was
back. What about poison ivy?
Yeah, I just marched in. Fearlessly. So.
What a great story. Well, boy, that you did get to see a lot of springs in person then, too.
It was, I would say, probably 36 springs in person. Of course, you know, one of them I could just look out my front door at the Meadow Center, San Marcos Springs. And
the best spring of all.
See that it was flowing.
Well, do you want to tell us anything about your deep dives into Comanche Springs?
Sure. The Comanche Spring, of course, is one of the major springs in Gunnar's book. He had it marked as gone dry, since it had indeed gone dry.
And completely. That's the spring in West Texas?
Yep, in Fort Stockton.
Fort Stockton.
It went dry completely in 1961. Gunnar's definition, like we had to kind of figure out his definition of what was a flowing spring and what was not. And so if a spring was intermittent, you would consider it a flowing spring. So for example, San Antonio Springs and San Pedro Springs in San Antonio, because those springs come back during high aquifer levels, he called those flowing springs.
Okay.
I don't know about that, but we wanted to respect kind of his interpretation or his classification. Comanche Springs, it's now for the last 10, 15 years, has been coming back every winter season as the levels recover from groundwater production for irrigation and municipal use. And so
but not at the volume that they originally flowed at.
Correct. It's been coming back probably about 10 cubic feet per second. So,
and they used to have a big pool and an aqua festival and all kinds of things around their spring.
Yeah. That was a spring that, there was a boom in groundwater drilling and pumping that caused that spring to go dry over about 12 years, pretty dramatically. And there were, not only was there a pool, but there was 6,000 acres of agriculture that relied on that spring flow.
Oh my.
And
what a loss.
Yeah. Those folks sued and went up for consideration by the Texas Supreme Court, but the Texas Supreme Court let the appeals court decision stand, which is the classic rule of capture. So you can pump and dry up your neighbor, you can pump and dry up your neighbor's spring.
You own your water underground, heaven high and hell deep.
Correct.
And the way it travels underground is way too occult and whatever,
concealed,
unknown, concealed in a cult.
So secret, occult, and concealed.
And that's how Texas still operates. So the people who are often blamed for Comanche Springs going dry, it turns out, are just one of many.
So that study, I love the history of things and the story of things. And so nobody had really told that story before, and so I dug through old newspaper accounts. I'm lazy, so I waited till they were all digitized, so it makes it easier to keyword search. Otherwise, it'd be microfiche.
Yeah.
And you youngsters out there, ask your grandpa what a microfiche is. But
boy, do I remember microfiche.
But, I was able to find that, though the Williams family got a lot of the blame, if not the vast majority of the blame, for the springs going dry, they were one of many. They weren't even the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth people to be pumping out there.
In volume.
In volume, yeah, back in the day. But because Clayton Williams was very prominent in the community, his name was listed first on the lawsuits.
Ah.
And then everybody else, which was depending on how you counted, like 60 to 200 people were listed alphabetically.
Well, that is very interesting, since I had never heard that before. Very good sleuthing you did there.
Right. Now, today, Williams family are the biggest pumpers in that area. And those springs are, even though they've come back over the last decade and a half seasonally, they're in jeopardy because there is a big project to export that water up to Midland.
Oh, no. Just when the springs are coming back. What a revolting development. Well, gosh, there's so much for you to talk about in this publication, and I'm so happy to hear that we can access it for free on the Meadows Center website. Your website is separate from the university's website?
It's part of the university's website system, but we have our own standing website there.
What is it?
Oh my gosh. You know, I just Google it.
Okay. So. Oh, good idea. Google Meadows
Center. The Meadows
Center.
Center water, and it'll yeah. pop up. And then look for the reports yes. tab.
Reports tab.
And it's the most recent report.
And the most recent report is about the springs of Texas.
Right.
Okay. Sounds okay. good.
We're going to take a quick station ID break. You are listening to Wonderful World here on KZSM LPFM 104.1 San Marcos, Texas. And the views expressed on this show are those of the hosts and the guests and not necessarily those of KZSM or SMTX-CRA with the governing board. We're going to be right back with you. HayesInform.com is your gateway to information that you need about emergencies here in Hayes County. If you go to their website, that is HayesInform.com, you will find all sorts of information from current alerts, upcoming events, and talking about safety here in our community. That is HayesInform.com. That is your connection, along with KZSM, LPFM 104.1. We are here to help in emergencies in the community. Go to HayesInformed.com to find out how you can be prepared.
I love my poodle, but baby, that don't mean I don't love you.
Run or walk with us May 4th for the second annual Prancing with the Poodles Fun Run Walk for Women's Wellness and Mental Health. The race starts at 9 a.m. at Landa Park in New Braunfels. Registration begins at 7:45. Early bird registration is $35 for ages 10 and up. Children are free. The first 100 registrants will receive a beautiful t-shirt. The event is sponsored by the new Sigma Sigma chapter of the Sigma Gamma Rho sorority. All proceeds will go to support women's wellness and mental health awareness through scholarships and programs for the Hayes County community. For more information, visit www.sanmarcosgrhos.org/poodles5k. See you there, with or without your poodle.
And we're back with the Wonderful, Wonderful World radio show about river issues in San Marcos at KZSM 104.1. And we have Dr. Robert Mace with us from the Meadows Center with his new report that just came out that you can find on the Meadows Center website. Just Google Meadows Center Water and look on the Reports tab to find it. And it's about the springs of Texas. What are the results of your report?
So the results show that we've had three times as many springs go dry since Gunnar Broom published his report in 75 and his book in 81. That was our hypothesis going in. You know, the thinking was that there's been a heck of a lot more pumping. In fact, by coincidence, there's been about three times as much pumping, total pumping, has occurred in Texas from our aquifers as there was back in 75 to 81. So
you said three times as many springs went dry. You
correct.
Mean that at, between the time that he studied them and the book came out, there was a set number that had gone dry, and then...
from when the report and the book came out till today, till our report came out.
Three times so as many went dry.
Over the past 50 years. So when the report and the book came out, there was about 20 of the springs in the report had gone dry.
Oh, okay.
And then today, 53 springs are dry.
Oh, okay.
So sadly, more springs have gone dry. That's, although a sad result, it's not surprising because...
But the total number of springs is quite large.
Correct.
Okay.
But not all the springs were in this study or in Gunnar Bruin's report. So there's thousands of springs out there.
That might flow part of the year.
Right. And another thing about this study is it's mostly focused on the major springs, greater than 1 cubic foot per second.
That's a major spring, greater than 1 cubic foot per second?
Yes.
Well, that surprises me. That's very little water.
I'd take one if I had one in my backyard.
Oh, yeah,
I'd
for
take
sure.
It. But there's a lot more, like thousands of smaller springs. And so it may be that they're more susceptible to groundwater pumping. They may be more susceptible to a warming climate that results in greater evaporation of moisture from soils and therefore less recharge to our aquifers.
Well, don't you think it's also many springs are from alluvial sand and gravel aquifers next to rivers that feed those springs? The river feeds the spring, and now our rivers are lower because we pump so much from our rivers also, more.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of human impacts on the rivers, on the aquifers, and those do have impacts on our springs across the state.
Well, what a great report. I'm really looking forward to reading it. Did you have a story about checking out a Dallas spring?
Yeah, so Dallas, most Texas cities, like San Marcos, started around a spring, around a source of water.
Drinking water.
And that was true for Dallas as well. There was a small spring there, kind of up the bank from the Trinity River, that an outpost formed around that became the seed for Dallas. And when I was researching, what happened to that spring, what's its current status, realized that they built a highway on top of it. So it's almost like a classic Dallas thing in a
way.
Was
it flowing when they built the highway on it?
It's unclear if it was flowing or not. My guess is probably not, because you probably don't want a flowing spring underneath your structure.
But maybe they rerouted it or poured concrete in it to plug it up, or...
But it's hard to say, and there actually is a historical marker, on a building on the frontage road that, talks about the spring. So, in some cases, it's it's pretty sad. My wife would joke with me, because I do like to try and stop at spring sites, and I've done that over many years, and we'll stop at a spring site, and she's just like, are we ever going to stop and look at springs that are still flowing?
That reminds me of our vacations. My husband and I, during the battles of the 1990s over wastewater, we looked at every wastewater treatment plant in every town where we ever went, and people thought we were so weird. But springs are much better, though sad occasionally.
Yeah, sounds like a second honeymoon, right? Visiting wastewater treatment plants.
Well, we were just trying to learn, especially about newfangled wastewater treatment plants, back in the day when San Marcos had one of the worst ones in the state. Because when you have a clean river, you can dump worse sewage treatment into it before the state will stop you. And so that's a whole nother show. We'll talk about that someday. Well, is there anything else about the report you'd love to tell us?
Sure. Sadly, like a lot of my research seems to be doom and gloom, where it's like identifying here's what's happened, and generally what's happened has not been
well,
good.
Well, you're the right person to do that because you generally have a pretty hilarious attitude.
But to me, it's like, you know, facts are friendly. So it's like, if we can quantify this like we've done, you know, one, it helps kind of elevate awareness.
Yes.
So I think before this study, nobody knew how many more springs had gone dry. And so this kind of makes it a little more real when the legislature talks about surface water, groundwater interaction, or people
which they're doing now mm-hmm. in an interim study. Talk about my mouth dropping open with amazement when I read that.
Yeah, there seems to be, as we grow, you know, the legislature's becoming more educated, more aware of the, you know, the consequences that happen, or the things that happen.
The desperate straits we are in for water in Central Texas, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
We're reaching further and further out to get it.
We are. And it's, you know, with this current drought, it's a little disturbing.
Very.
Looking at what's going on with Canyon Lake at historic lows.
Oh, it's so low.
Lake Travis and Lake Buchanan, possibly already in a new drought of record. Three years after we set a new drought of record.
Oh, my goodness. We're in stage three in the Edwards Aquifer this week. Shocking in April.
We'll keep our fingers crossed that we get some spring rains before our hot and dry summer hits. And then La Nina hits in the fall, winter, and then we're back into our hot, dry summer. So if we don't get some rain this spring that brings up aquifer levels and brings up reservoir levels, the next year is going to be really interesting.
I'm so hopeful that May will bring showers, since April did not bring enough, because May can be a very wet month. Mm-hmm. We have had quite a bunch of floods in May. So I don't want a flood, but I mm-hmm. wouldn't mind a little 8-inch rain, say, 3 times in May. That would do.
We're still in El Nino conditions, which
favor
wetter than normal conditions, but we'll be transitioning to neutral and then into La Nina conditions towards the end of summer.
And La Nina, refresh my memory, it does not call for Gulf hurricanes, right?
Yes, a little bit.
Yeah, so El Nino tends to act as a hurricane suppressor.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But La Nina,
the absence of El Nino makes hurricanes more likely. But I took a look, because I often tell people, we need a mellow tropical system to come through and all of our problems will be solved.
Uh-huh.
And I told a reporter that a couple weeks ago, and I was like, what are the odds? And so I found a track map of hurricane and the remnants of hurricanes that come over the hill country. Sadly, it's less than a 2% chance in any given year.
Well, that's terrible. And I don't really want to wish a hurricane on anybody.
Mellow tropical system, that's what I say.
Well, we've had some floods here from Pacific hurricanes that came barreling mm-hmm. up and causing training storms. I don't really want something that severe, but it does happen from the Pacific side, too.
True.
Well, we are closing today and saying goodbye to Dr. Robert Mace from the Meadow Center for Water and the Environment. And this is the Wonderful World radio show at KZSM FM 104.1. And we are on the second Tuesday of every month at 11:30. So please listen in. Next month, we're going to talk about the disposable container ban that is being enacted in San Marcos at the beginning of May in the river. Thank you for being with us today. Enjoyed it so much, Dr. Mace.
Thank you for having me.
Of green and red roses too, I see them bloom for me and you. I think to myself, what a wonderful world. See skies of blue and clouds of white, bright blessed days and those dark sacred nights.